dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We're coming to you from, well, an important venue in that war for the free world. It is where conservatives gather annually under the auspices of the American Conservative Union for what they call the Conservative Political Action Conference. It is a star-studded affair with extraordinarily important conservatives, elected officials, policy makers, pundits, media personalities, and a great many young people, I'm very happy to say, here who are clearly the future of conservatism, and I would argue for the country as well. I'm very pleased to have with us for this first segment to talk a little bit about, not so much CPAC, but another very, very important front in the war for the free world, namely what's happening to our friends in Israel and the importance of our strategic alliance with the Jewish state. His name is Roger Aronoff. We've been friends and colleagues for decades, I think. He's these days the executive director of an important new initiative, the Citizens Commission on National Security. And it just had a very important maiden voyage, I guess you'd say, a program on this issue of the U.S.-Israel alliance and its importance to national security. Roger, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about this event.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be with you. Yes, we took on the issue of the U.S.-Israeli alliance and the national security implications for both countries. And we had Alan Dershowitz was one of our guests, and he talked all about the history. We tackled the issue of the Palestinian-Israeli peace movement or the two-state solution and why most of us think that this Trump plan is not going to succeed any more than any of the other ones. There are just too many reasons why this has never happened before, and it's probably not going to happen this time, and they're kind of setting themselves up for failure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Though we don't know much about this peace plan,
right.
I saw something, and you know the internet, I have no idea whether it's true, but it suggested that Jared Kushner had made some statement to the effect that when this peace plan is put into place, the borders of Israel will be open for trade. And I can't believe that's so, but I'm not sure I can believe what else is going to be in this plan, apparently,
right.
Either.
I've heard.
What are you hearing?
$25 billion going to the Palestinians, and that includes to Hamas and Gaza. You know, that's part of the plan.
This is on the presumption that they will suddenly have changed their spots and
right.
Welcome the Jewish state and be willing to live side by side in
right.
peace with them, as you were saying. Ain't happened so far.
Right.
Doesn't seem bloody likely to me either.
Yeah, they've turned down incredible offers that they had before, which included half of Jerusalem and 95% of the West Bank contiguous.
Yeah. And what's the problem, as you see it, Roger?
One of the problems is,
what is it that prompts them to be refusing such generous offers?
Well, because they don't want to have a Jewish state next door.
Any Israel,
exactly.
Right.
You know, and
Judenrein, I think,
exactly.
is what Hitler called it.
And for them, right of return mm-hmm. means 5 million, you know, as opposed to maybe 60,000 if you go to real descendants of people who left there and mostly who left voluntarily yeah. in the first place.
Right.
So
at the call of the Arab nations
right,
who were
exactly.
going to turn the place over to them after they finished destroying the State of Israel in their preemptive war back in 1948. So, Roger, as you delved into this subject, you talked about various aspects of the current challenges to Israel. Interestingly enough, I just came from a breakout session that the Center for Security Policy sponsored under the leadership of our president, Fred Flights, on the subject of, among other things, anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, and the BDS movement. I know one of your speakers, Steve Franks, talked about that. Talk a little bit about what BDS stands for, first of all, what its purpose is, and why does it seemingly have the kind of, well, cachet, I guess you might say, among young people that it does at the moment, and what are the implications of that?
Yeah, it's boycott, divest, and sanction. It's
Israel.
Israel. It's kind of a follow-on to what happened with South Africa, and it's part of this effort to brand Israel as an apartheid state, which is nothing farther from the truth, because there are many Arabs who are part of the Knesset, they're on the Supreme Court, they have all the rights that any other citizen has in Israel.
Yeah. Interestingly, one of the speakers in this program, the center sponsor just now, said that in a recent poll, I think it was 70% of the Arabs living in Israel said they would take up arms to resist if they were told they had to move to the Palestinian areas. So suggests it ain't such bad, apartheid arrangement. So the BDS movement has become a phenomenon, particularly on college campuses. Did your panel delve into why that is, and again, what the implications are of this now finding its way into the mainstream, maybe even, of younger Americans?
Well, as you know, the universities have been so taken over by the left on so many levels, and I'm afraid that too many young Jewish people that would care about Israel aren't armed with the facts to fight back. And so this...
Well, it's a similar confusion, I guess, to what is going on with respect to our own country.
Right.
But it just is, in a way, in a concentrated form in terms of now increasingly anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist sentiment as well.
Yeah.
You had so many rock stars, as far as I'm concerned, on this program. Claire Lopez, our colleague, of course, at the center. General Tom McInerney, Yoram Edinger, Alan Dershowitz, as well as Steve Frank and old friend Maury Amitai.
And among Cliff May.
Cliff May.
Yeah.
In the course of these conversations, is there one particular takeaway that you'd like to leave with our audience?
Well, the particular takeaway, I would say, is that this relationship is strong. It's going to remain strong. Israel is like a laboratory in many ways, and they are the ones right there on the front line. I see them as the real check on Iran. Mm-hmm. The rest of the world talks about it, but Israel has to deal with it every day and think that any day a missile could come flying. And so that's why Israel goes in there, and the Mossad, they will take out the information and expose to the world about the true nature of their nuclear program.
I'm sorry that we don't have more time to really do deep dives on these, but we will be having, I'm quite sure, many of these individuals back on our air to talk about it, and I look forward to doing the same thing with you, Roger, and presumably they're poised to take other steps if necessary as well. We are very much in debt to you for your cumulative efforts, and good luck with this new venture.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are visiting with celebrities, rock stars of the conservative movement, other remarkable intellects and leaders here at the Conservative Political Action Conference in the National Harbor Gaylord Hotel outside Washington, D.C. And one of those rock stars, by my estimation, is with me now, I'm pleased to say. She is Gloria Greenfield. She is an award-winning documentary filmmaker of quite serious accomplishment. We're going to talk with her about a couple of the themes that she has addressed in her films, including most recently The Fight of Our Lives, Defeating the Ideological War. She has also made Body and Soul, The State of the Jewish Nation, Unmasked, Judophobia, and The Case for Israel, Democracy's Outpost. Gloria, it is so good to have you back. Welcome. We could and must do a full program with you, but we're catching as catch can here at CPAC today, so we're just delighted to have you with us. Your films could hardly be more topical at the moment. When you look at the rise of the ideological left and their Islamist allies, unlikely as they may be, not simply elsewhere in the West, but here in the United States as well. When you look at the increasing aggressiveness as they pursue anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, a subject of a program that the Center for Security Policy is sponsoring at CPAC today, as a matter of fact. Give us your sense of, well, foreboding perhaps, but what you make of some of the warnings that you have been giving us through your films, seemingly coming all too true here in America, not just elsewhere.
First, let me say it's really an honor to be sitting here with you. Thank you so much. Look, what we're seeing today is the continuing blossoming of the seeds that were planted by the KGB years ago, right?
Very important point.
And you know, that penetration really first went into the left in Europe, and it's permeated, it's penetrated into our society here in the United States, and it's polluting the minds of our younger generations. It's polluted the minds of a significant number of faculty in some of our has been considered our best and what I would consider today our most dangerous institutions. And really, when I look at this, what I see is, if one wants to destroy the West, it's for that enemy or those enemies that want to destroy the West, they know that the foundation of Western culture emanates, it's founded on the values that emanate from the Hebrew Bible, from Judeo-Christian values. So it is in their interest to promote secularism and to demonize Christianity and Judaism.
Mm-hmm. It's not, in a way, it's not just not having a religion, it's anti-religious.
It's anti-religion. It's Marxism at its full blossom.
Yeah. So, well, and that's why that's the connective tissue here. As you say, this does go back to the KGB. This goes back to Marxist-Leninism. The march through the institutions was one of the central thrusts their assault on the Judeo-Christian world. And Marx was, as you know, very rabidly anti-God. I mean, I think he proudly boasted that he would go to hell because of his enmity towards God. But give us a sense of how that deliberate strategy of taking down academia, the media, our culture, you know, our governing institutions, translates inexorably into this kind of, well, hollowing out of our civilization.
So we're seeing a comprehensive ideological war against our values that involves both the hard left and the hard right. And so we see the Islamists who are in bed with groups like Antifa, with political leaders who are espousing socialism, which they try to camouflage as you know, democratic socialism or some, you know, fraudulent terms, but it's socialism. They are fostering the hatred of capitalism,
and I would argue of freedom more generally.
Absolutely.
It's not just free enterprise.
That's right. It is freedom
more generally.
It's
in favor of control.
That's right.
That will give you certain things that you will fancy.
right.
and give up your freedom to obtain, only
right.
you won't have either in the end.
Right.
Isn't that the history of socialism?
Yeah, and they're picking up, you know, useful idiots along the way. So
Very
you
much so.
Find supporters who don't really understand what socialism is, don't really understand Marxist-Leninist theory.
Right.
And they're helping them in their ignorance by voting for them.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have imagined? Who really would have imagined in this country we would have legislators like we have today in Congress who are calling for the destruction of our economic system,
mm-hmm.
who are promoting socialism? And it's become a cool thing.
Yeah.
It's hip. And you ask most...
Well,
yeah.
actually, you know, you ask the rhetorical question, who would have thunk? It actually was predictable. If you look at that march through the institutions,
yeah.
if you look at the recruitment and the
right.
emplacement of those professors, if you look at what given two or three generations of, you know, indoctrination and pedagogy they have been able to accomplish, it's a certitude that you would get numbers of people voting for the kind of claptrap that they have been promoting all these years. But I did want to ask you just a point of clarification. And again, our guest is Gloria Greenfield. We're here with her at CPAC 2019. You said the hard left and the hard right, and then you sort of cut to the Islamists. Were they meant what you meant as examples of the hard right? Because typically what we're told is the hard right are, of course, the Nazis, the neo-Nazis, the fascists,
well,
and so
on. Well, they're totalitarians.
Well, they're all totalitarians.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering whether you agree with what I've come to believe, which is the so-called hard right of the Nazi, neo-Nazi, totalitarian, fascist character is really actually on the hard left, not
yeah.
so much on the right, which means that the Islamists are sort of bringing up the communitarian, you know, totalitarian right, if you will, though I'm not sure it's anything really other than communism with a god at the end of the day.
Yeah, I do believe that the Islamists, there are several leaders in the Islamist movements that have studied in Moscow.
Indeed.
You know?
Patrice Lumumba University, if
yes.
I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Including
and,
Khomeini, I think.
And, you know, you could go so far left that you become very, very far right.
Right.
Right? So,
but it's an interesting point because, and the reason I'm taking your time to
yeah.
address it is that you've studied ideological warfare.
Yes.
You understand whence it comes. And in the end, if it in fact is coming from various vectors, but they all basically have a common purpose.
Yes.
We call it the red-green axis at the Center for Security mm-hmm. Policy, namely the takedown of our society, of our culture, of our civilization, of our government,
mm-hmm.
of our freedoms. The exact placement on the political spectrum is less interesting than focusing on the common threat that they represent.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And look, they're employing strategies and tactics that have been used in the past against the free world.
And successfully,
and look at the behavior modification that's been taking place.
Yeah.
They have people who are terrified that if they stand up for what they may believe or may hold dear to them, they know that they're going to be sent into galut.
Right.
Right?
They will be vilified as haters and racists and bigots and Islamophobes, as I have been, and I think you probably as well. Many
mm-hmm.
of us have.
Yeah.
Not because we are, of course, but because that is the most efficient way,
right?
Short of killing us, which I guess some might want to do, but of silencing us or
right.
at least suppressing the kind of information that you've put in your marvelous films and
mm-hmm.
we've tried to disseminate other ways. And to the extent that that is successful at the hands of people like the Southern Poverty Law Center, or the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or you know, they're running dogs in the United States Congress, for that matter, or the media more generally. We've got a problem that is greatly exacerbating the sort of political ferment and indoctrination and so on that they're engaged in. Thank you so much. Gloria Greenfield. It's great to talk with you. Come back to us again soon.
Thank you.
More with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined at the Conservative Political Action Conference outside Washington, D.C. by one of my favorite people, Sam Sorbo. Sam is a woman of many parts. She is a best-selling author. She is an actress of renown, and she is a filmmaker. And among her credits are her books, They're Your Kids, Teach from Love, Share the Light, and her most recent movie is Let There Be Light, and there's a new one in the works called Miracle in East Texas. Sam, I don't know how you find time with all of that to be a mother and a radio show host and a conservative movement leader, but you do, and I'm so grateful to you for both doing all of that as well as being a good friend.
Well, thank you very much. It's fun to be here with you.
It's good to have you across the table. Let me ask you about something that you have spent a lot of time both thinking about and helping others understand and hopefully adopt some of the lessons you've learned over time.
Yep.
And I want to put it into context because increasingly I think many of us have come to the conclusion that something is not right in America.
Yeah.
And one of the things that is contributing to it not being right is what we've done to, as you say, our kids in terms of their education.
Right.
And you have famously talked about the dangers associated with having the state be responsible for their education.
Right.
So give us a flavor of what you've learned over your years studying this and homeschooling, too.
So the term public school is a misnomer. It's a government school, and it comes with its own conflict of interest. Having the government teach our citizenry is in itself a conflict of interest. And the reason I say that is because we are unique in the world that our government is of the people, by the people, and for the people, meaning that the power resides with the people. If you want the government to teach the people that you won't get the government, right, which is a power usurper, to teach its citizens that the power actually resides with them. It's a conflict of interest, and they're not doing it. And the evidence is in.
Well, let me interrupt you, because if our government is in fact of the people, by the people, for the people, how could it be that it has been a usurper of freedom, as opposed to the champion of it and protector of it?
That's exactly correct, because it stopped teaching the citizens that the power resided with them. So we don't teach civics in our schools
anymore.
Basically
that the government has...
It has no interest in teaching.
Inherently mutated from what the founders envisioned into just another statist enterprise.
Right.
And what it's educating in its government schools are children to think and believe and submit to is basically just old-fashioned government control.
Yes,
government
as God.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is that...
Well, you did a very, very good job.
It's
government as God, right? We didn't take religion out of schools. We took Christianity, or Judeo-Christianity, out of our school system, and we replaced it with secular humanism, which is, in its sort of most boiled-down version, government as God.
Mm.
And that's the equivalent of socialism/communism. And so that's what we're ending up with. Why do you think Bernie Sanders got more votes total than both Hillary and Trump combined of the youth vote?
Wow.
our youth is thinking, is growing up thinking, because they've been taught this in our schools, that socialism is grandpa with candy.
Right. This is government on steroids, of course.
Oh, yeah.
It's
how many hamburgers are you allowed to eat?
It's the
free
stuff.
You may have one hamburger every Wednesday.
Right. But it's also combined with that idea of free stuff that government will give you if you just go along with it. Right?
The idea is the government gives you a bunch of stuff. What they don't understand is that's not actually how it works. How it works is the government takes a bunch of stuff from you. That's how it works.
Right. Starting
so
with
it's
freedom,
like the
right?
pilot episode is you're going to get a bunch of free stuff. But then the series, when it goes to series, it's actually the government takes everything. And so, and what's great, what is so great, is we have some really staunch socialists in the marketplace now selling those ideas. You shouldn't have three hamburgers. Mm-hmm. I'm the boss. Mm-hmm. Cash me outside. I mean, and that's the bullying. That's bullying socialism. That's all that is. Right. Bernie Sanders.
And it's where it goes eventually,
right.
inevitably. But it's
already there.
It starts.
She's
it's supposed
there.
To start
Bernie
out
Sanders,
with the free
yeah.
stuff, and it'll be great.
Sanders is the whole grandpa with candy. I want you to have free college education. I want you to have this. I want you to have that. We should have health care for everyone. And Ocasio-Cortez, who is, you know, Bernie on steroids or whatever you want to call her,
right.
is actually saying the truth. No, you shouldn't have that many hamburgers.
Or cows.
and we should all live in public housing.
Mm-hmm.
All evidence to the contrary. She lives in a very nice, ritzy building.
Not public housing.
Peloton,
right.
bikes, and all kinds of things.
Right. So hypocrisy, of course, is endemic in the socialist enterprise. It is always about the elite having the good stuff and everybody else having equal and not
crap.
Such good stuff. Right. I did want to come back to something you said, though, Sam, because, as you know, one of my very serious concerns, in addition to what the left is up to, is what we call the other side of the red-green axis is up to, the Islamists.
Yes.
The one exception, it seems, to the propagation of secular humanism as part of the pedagogy of the government
yes.
schools
mm-hmm.
is, can't talk about Christianity, can't talk about Judaism, or as far as I can tell, Buddhism, Hinduism, Zoroastrianism,
right.
but you can teach about Islam.
In fact, you can actually force the children to
spout
Islamic
practice,
fundamental.
Go to field trips
right.
in the mosques and all.
Yes, I've seen that.
How does that work? I mean, what is the exception to the rule that enables one favored religion to be taught in the government schools, but the rest not?
Well, it's a preference, right? And I would say that like the likelihood is that they teach like 3 days of the Bible is a bunch of hooey and it's just a collection of myths and fairy tales. And then they do 2 weeks.
And violent, horrible stuff, too.
Right.
Probably.
And then they do 2 weeks on Islam and how it's peaceful and it's wonderful. And I always say it's peaceful if you're dead. You know,
or if you submit.
You know. So
not pleasant, but if you submit.
Right, exactly. So it's the same thing. There was a class, and this is going back a few years, and I go into it in my book, They're Your Kids, where they taught a little bit of civics, and then they taught the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is basically the Communist Manifesto, globalism on steroids, it's the whole thing. They taught that for 6 weeks. They actually taught it with videos that were created by Scientologists.
Interesting.
The Church of Scientology, which I was like, I thought the church wasn't sort of allowed in school. So how is this all jiving? I don't right. understand it.
Well, I don't know about the Scientologists, but I certainly have seen in curricula and school textbooks and...
Yeah, and it's even in math textbooks, by the
indeed,
way.
Really?
Like, let's be frank. If you don't mind.
I will be frank. You better be Sam, but we'll talk frankly. But here's the thing. It does seem to me that it's more than a preference. It seems to me as though there's an institutionalized exception that's being made. And I just wonder whether you've perceived this too, that it's under sort of the threat that if we don't do this, it will go badly, that there will be, you know, some unpleasantness if we don't accommodate demands for, you know, teaching essentially Islam. It's just not you know, the same as any other religion. It is, by definition, right, somehow more exalted.
Right.
In the government schools.
And it's altogether possible. I don't know if you've seen Michelle Malkin was just, Twitter just threatened her that she needed to get a lawyer. She needed to lawyer up because she tweeted some images of Muhammad.
Oh, can't do
and
that.
So apparently that's against the law in Pakistan. And
indeed,
she's like, yeah, I don't live in Pakistan.
Yeah, but what Google has promised to do
is to
the Pakistanis is to enforce Pakistani blasphemy laws,
right,
worldwide. And again, this is the kind of threat and
yes,
response to the threat that I'm so worried about.
So I wouldn't. I don't have any evidence of it. I do find it odd because clearly the Quran is sort of anathema to American values, to our founding values. But I think it already crept in before people sort of realized.
Yeah.
And we had a president who said,
for sure. Sharia,
you know,
is here. Sam Sorbo. Thank you so much for
being
with us.
Oh, yes. And my radio show is The Sam Sorbo Show, and you can find it at mojo50.com. That's mojo50.com.
Fabulous.
Yes.
So good to have you with
us. Thank you
so
much.
Come back
soon.
Thank you.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We are finding more and more interesting folks through the radio row here at CPAC Environs, one of whom is John Rossomondo, a friend of many years, a senior analyst at the superb Investigative Project on Terrorism, the leader of whom is a very close and dear friend of many years as well, Stephen Emerson. John has been doing investigative analysis and reporting for decades on many of the topics that we cover here at Secure Freedom Radio, and in particular is a dogged monitor and a very important reporter about what the Muslim Brotherhood front organizations are up to inside the United States. And one that has come to his attention, and with his help we're going to bring to yours, of course, is the Council on American Islamic Relations, better known by its acronym CARE. John, it's good to have you with us, and thank you for taking some time out of the CPAC program to visit. Remind us about the genesis of CARE. How do we know that it is a Muslim Brotherhood front?
Back in the 2008 Holy Land Foundation trial, the FBI testified that CARE leaders, including its current executive director, Nihad Awad, belonged to something called the Palestine Committee of the Muslim Brotherhood, whose entire purpose was to support Hamas. And you know, CARE is like, we're not Brotherhood, or we're not. But you had a court that said that in 2009, after they ruled that there was a prima facie case as to Kerry's involvement in a conspiracy to support Hamas. Yet, we found out...
to interrupt you, forgive me, but more to the point, the FBI introduced evidence in that trial, as I recall, the transcript of surveillance that it did on the organizational meeting of the Council on American Islamic Relations in Philadelphia in 1993, at which this Nihat Awad, among others, met with Hamas representatives to establish Kerr. Did it not? And that sort of is, talk about prima facie evidence, that's a smoking gun, it would seem to be, about the Brotherhood connection.
If I could just give you a little clarification, that's where they decided they wanted to create an organization like CARE. A year later, in 1994, we have a Palestine Committee document that was entered into evidence that showed CARE as an organization of the Brotherhood here in the United States. And, this is where they...
That's when they actually put it together. But the point is that the lineage of connections to Hamas, which, of course, is the Muslim Brotherhood's franchise in the Palestinian areas, couldn't be more clear or documented by the United States government and attested to in federal court, no less. So I want to come to the subject of your recent important investigative report at IPT News, John Rossomondo, about funding that the Council on American Islamic Relations is getting from foundations in this country, non-Muslim foundations, by the way. But just to tie this with a bow, when people are funding CARE, they are funding a Muslim Brotherhood front tied to Hamas, a terrorist organization, and it has been such from the get-go. No?
Exactly.
Outrageous. So, John, tell us about the magnitude of the funding and what you found when you made inquiries of these foundations as to whether they were troubled by the anti-Semitism that is much in evidence in CARE's work and writings.
Well, what I found was 265 grants over the past decade given by non-Muslim foundations, the largest of which is the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, that's linked to all the major Silicon Valley companies.
Moguls.
Mm-hmm. And one of which was given information that this Silicon Valley Community Foundation associated donor fund gave $500,000, and that donor fund is run by the founder of WhatsApp.
Really?
He was also tied with...
Deep pockets.
Yeah, exactly.
Deep pockets. So when you establish contact with these guys to ask whether this was a problem, that they were funding a font of anti-Semitism, what did you get in the way of response?
I got a dodge. They didn't answer. Instead, they went and said that CARE was a valuable resource about anti-Muslim bigotry, Islamophobia, the usual sort of boilerplate stuff that we get from the far left that has been targeted against you in all of our organizations.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of ironic that you have people talk about tolerance, love, and so forth, giving $5.4 million, I'm talking about it, dozens of foundations to an organization that is connected with Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, and has no problem with anti-Semitic bigotry.
Yeah. And as we talked about earlier in the program with Gloria Greenfield, John Rossomondo, this ostensible justification for supporting the Council on American Islamic Relations, namely that they're so good on, Islamophobia. Islamophobia, let's be clear, is a smear that is used by organizations like CARE and the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League and others who should know better to silence people like thee and me. It has nothing to do with our actual views on Islam or Muslims or the practice of their faith or what have you. It has to do with the validity, I believe. The more intense the criticism, the more on target we are in pointing out that there are organizations like CARE and other fronts of the Muslim Brotherhood that are seeking to take down our country through what they call civilization jihad. So when you look at this, it fits a larger profile, doesn't it, seemingly, at a moment when anti-Semitism seems to be, well, in vogue, I guess you might even say. It's certainly not the sordid, disreputable activity that used to engender, criticism from the left as well as the right. Now, it seems de rigueur even on the part of a lot of people in Congress and in the media and so on. But one of the really aggressive promoters of it is the Muslim Brotherhood. And as you've looked at these guys and their fronts and their funders and their impact, what's your basic bottom line on the impact that they're having in a country like ours?
Well, basically what they're doing is they're shutting down debate and discourse. I mean, if you want to laugh, I saw some people, at least on Twitter and so forth, who are connected with the Brotherhood, referring to Saudi Arabia, of all places, as Islamophobic. It's become a term to denigrate even Muslims who disagree with them.
Yeah.
To shut down debate, shut down discourse. I mean, really, if I want to coin a term, equanophobia is really...
Equan, of course, being the Arabic translation of the Muslim Brotherhood. That is rich to be calling the Saudis anti-Muslim or Islamophobic. John, one of your other recent pieces was about this basketball player from Turkey and concerns that he had that his government might take action against him. Talk a little bit about the response to his concerns and the perceived threat that he faced.
I saw a lot of positive response from people on Twitter that people were concerned for his life. We've seen cases across Europe where Turkish dissidents have been kidnapped and taken back to Turkey. You have the case of the Diyanet, which is Turkey's religious affairs ministry, spying on people who are suspected of being tied with Fethullah Gulen, the Islamist exile in Pennsylvania. And he was worried that he would be assassinated by Turkish spies.
Hit squad. Yeah.
And, there were cases, I think I recall back in 2013, where something like that happened to a Turkish dissident. I mean, Turkey is becoming like Iran, which is exacting revenge on dissidents abroad. I mean, Turkey is in NATO. I don't understand it. We treat Turkey just like it's any other country, like France, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it isn't, and it is becoming less so by the day. So much more to talk with you about, John. We've got to leave it at that for the moment, though. Thank you for the great work you do at the Investigative Project on Terrorism. Come back to us soon.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.